In the next two sessions that we're going to have just as families, staff people, I'm going to try to make them fairly interactive. This time I'm going to lay out some content and try to leave a little time at the end just to kind of volley back and forth on it. The next session, I think there are two, aren't there, that we're going to sit down together? John Strapazon asked me specifically, and I say that because I want you to know it wasn't me trying to step up on a soapbox, but share with you what we're doing with state universities as well as Christian schools with the Athletic Habitude Program, how to reach athletes using these images. We've developed an athletic version of it, and that one we're going to make very interactive. We're just going to talk and try to get creative and as creative as we can be on how to reach outsiders that don't yet know Jesus, but just we need a bridge to their life. We're just excited about what's going on there. I have some guys helping me with handouts here. Can you guys hop up and help me? We're going to give you a single sheet just as a note-taking guide. I don't know if you guys that are sitting toward the back are just married to those chairs, but if you're not, if you're just dating, you're not married to those chairs. I would love us to sit as close to the front as possible, even to the side, because I want us to interact, and sometimes it's harder to hear without microphones if we're way in the back and we're sharing something. So if you're open, and if you're Christian, if you will just kidding. Yeah, if you've ever loved Jesus in your life, Yeah, there's that manipulation thing. I always go back to that. I'm the Wicked Witch of the West. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Max, you're always in the front row. At Glorietta, if you're not teaching, you're in the front row. Hey, by the way, this is kind of a weird way to start, but let's take 5 minutes. Many of you were very, very gracious enough to come up and say hi, and we've known, I think I've met many of you over the years, but you had comments to make about or after that first session about Dorothy's Way. Any comments you want to make, observations, questions about just kind of a new way to do evangelism? Yes, go ahead.
Stories, Tim. I like the stories bring to life, and I like sticks too, so
that's kind of cool. There you go. So stories about sticks are especially helpful, yeah. No, stories are just a great way to reach students, aren't they? In fact, probably anybody, but I think it's why Jesus taught with them. So other observations or questions you have? Anything at all you want to just kind of volley back and forth on before we jump into this one? No? Everybody good? You're still not nodding your head. Everybody good? Okay, good. All right. I want to open with prayer, but I'm afraid if you shut your eyes, you're going to slip off into a nap. It's nap time, isn't it? It's 1:45. You know, somebody once said, in hell, it's always 2:00 in the afternoon, and you're the speaker, you know? So let me pray. If you'll stay awake and pray with me, we'll do that, okay? Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity to lead. Most of us, Father, I think, entered into this role with fear and trepidation. We didn't really know what we were doing. We just knew we wanted to advance the kingdom and do ministry, reach people, teach the Bible. But Father, now we find ourselves with many of us, campuses full of kids that don't yet walk with you or aren't disciples. Help us, Father, to become better leaders, even in this session. Holy Spirit, I pray you'd encourage us. Just blow wind in our sails. Refresh us. Fill us in this time we have together this afternoon. Say something new. Give us a new word from you, Lord. Me included. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen. This session is very, very simple. In fact, it won't take an hour. Most of you don't believe me when I say that, but I promise you it won't take an hour. So I will leave some time to interact, but I call it life-giving leaders or becoming a life-giving leader. John Strapazon and I were talking about getting ready for this one, and he said, Tim, I would love for you to do something with our campus workers, our pastors, that just will refresh them. And I feel like this is going to be just a refreshing time. I don't know if you're like me, but once in a while, God gives me a little wake-up call that reminds me why I got into this gig in the first place. Do you ever get those two? Either a short-term mission trip coming back and they were all changed, you think, this is why I do what I do. It's certainly not for the money, but this is why I do what I do. I got such a wake-up call about a year and a half ago, but it was an extraordinary one, very, very different from how they normally come. I was on the campus of two different colleges in the same month, and they were a picture of contrast. Here's what happened. One campus was dying. You probably have seen them. Enrollment was down. People were scared. The administration was scrambling to come up with plans on what we can do to recruitment and retention and all that stuff. Discipleship programs on this Christian campus were not working. Chapel was dead. It was full of a bunch of rules. In fact, that's how we decided to govern the kids, just have a lot of rules, just a bunch of rules. You know what I'm talking about? Rules aren't bad, but there was just a bunch of them, and that became the watchword of the administration, the faculty, and so forth. And I just watched this campus from a distance, but on the campus especially, just dying. Now, the reason I share that with you is in the very same month, I'm on this other Christian university campus that was a picture of the opposite. It was full of life. In fact, they were having to build new buildings, new res halls. And they were bursting at the seams, but everybody was laughing at it, like, what a great problem to have, you know. They had chapel, but chapel was full of life. Imagine that. Students didn't come just because they had to, but they wanted to be there. Retention was less of an issue. You always work with retention, but it was less of an issue. And I just stopped down and I asked myself the question, what is the difference? Same theology, actually same denomination. That's all I'm going to say. Same denomination, same theology, chapels, same cotton picking worship songs. But one was a picture of life and one was dying. Not very long after that, I happened to be speaking in two churches and saw the very same thing. This wasn't the same month, but one church, actually both churches were called Grace Church, ironically. One church just dying, the other church full of life. But I'm telling you, same bullet covers, same worship songs, same, I mean, 3 points, you know, sad story, 3 points in a poem. I mean, the same thing going on in both churches from the pulpit, but two different pictures. And this began me on a journey to ask, what is the difference? Is it theology? Is it the church? Is it the location? All the church growth books tell you it's this or this. Here's the formula. A, B, C equals D. But I started thinking something different. I don't know if it's new, but it's different. And the thought that I had was this whole idea of becoming a life-giving leader. Do you know leaders that you would say they're life-giving? Whenever they're around people, their theology is correct, but that's not the same. It's they breathe life on people. And have you not been around leaders that you would say, that's the last way I would describe that man or that woman? I want to talk to you about this because it's a global issue. I mentioned, I think, in my session this morning that we'll be in Egypt this month, the next week, actually. I was there last year, and I saw two churches. One was, in fact, the pastor came up to me in one church and said, well, we're just losing people. We got 47 people and we're losing more and more. It's so hard. It's just hard. It's just hard. And I thought to myself, well, sure, it's hard. You're in a Muslim country. Of course it's hard. But then the next break, I talked to a pastor, get this, just outside of Cairo, he's pastoring 14,000 people. And they're growing and thriving in a Muslim country. So I'm not going to let us excuse ourselves with, well, it's just hard here. It's just hard in Oklahoma or Cairo or Tulsa or Atlanta or whatever. It's not that. God is either breathing life on what you're doing or he isn't. And I don't think it's his fault if he's not. I think it's our fault. So with that said, if you look at your handout, I want to jump into this by looking at the second story of the Bible. First of all, you all know the second story of the Bible, don't you? You're hesitating, aren't you? You all know the first story of the Bible, right? The story of creation, where God created the heavens and the earth and fish and animals and mankind and so forth. The second story, however, is, I think, just as significant as the first story. In fact, Tim, if you'll go ahead and click the slide for me, please. The second story is where we're introduced to two trees in the midst of the Garden of Eden. Now, I want you to think with me. They're pictures for us. You'll kind of learn really quickly. I'm a picture guy. Isn't it interesting that when God describes, through the writer of Genesis, he describes the Garden of Eden, there are loads and loads and loads of trees. In fact, the reason we know that is because God said, of every tree thou mayest freely eat. But only two trees are named. In Genesis 2:9, God says, there was the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I believe these are not only two trees, but I believe they represent and illustrate two different approaches to life, ministry, leadership, you name it. And so, without further ado, I want to jump into this. And what I'd like to do for your note's sake, if you'll go to the next slide, Tim, I'd like to give you a couple of columns from this second story of the Bible. Both of them are going to be descriptors. What you need, John?
Handouts.
Oh, are we out of handouts? Do we have any couples that you both, the husband and wife, have a handout and you could share? Okay, great. There are several spirit-filled Christians in the audience giving their handouts to John. I'm just kidding. I'm going to put you on that guilt trip, Arda. Okay. Bob, this is my encourager. I bring him with me everywhere I go. He goes, I heard what you're going to say here. That's why I take him with me. Just, you know. Okay, looks like maybe a half a dozen. Okay, we have an extra one here. Who would like one right now? We have one right here. There you go. Okay. Okay, we have another one there in the back. Anybody want that one?
We shall return.
Okay. That's what Jesus said too. He's just being Christ-like, aren't you? Okay. All right. Two trees, second story of the Bible. What I'd like to do is I want to play out the lives of Adam and Eve and their early family, and show you how both of these trees, when they ingested them, when they partook of them, gave them a completely different approach and viewpoint and perspective on life, okay? I want you just to trot through this with me, because I think it might not only enlighten you a little bit, as it did me when I studied this out, but it just breathed life on me. And it re-pointed me in the direction of the kind of leader I want to become. So with that said, Tim, go ahead and click the next one. In the tree of life, we see innocence and peace. And in fact, remember in the first two chapters of Genesis when Adam and Eve are just taking in the tree of life, there was a great sense of innocence, wasn't there? They were naked and unashamed. They were just innocent. Didn't seem to bother them. They had no clothes on. And peace, oh my goodness. There was peace vertically with God, peace with one another. We don't see any picture of conflict yet, do we? But in Genesis 3, when they begin to digest the forbidden fruit, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what we see immediately is victimization and turmoil. The first time we see Adam and Eve even smelling like they might be a victim is right after they ate that tree. Remember this? God came down and said, Adam, what did you do? Well, the woman that you gave me, she made me eat. And then Eve, well, the serpent. They're now becoming victims, aren't they? Well, it's not my fault. If you only knew, it's not my fault. Is this not a picture of mankind today? And not just mankind, Christianity and turmoil. Conflict and turmoil. My goodness gracious. Once they ate of the wrong tree, this was a picture of life. Let's look at the next one. Number two, in the tree of life, it was secure and free and transparent. Once again, there was great security to be transparent with one another, and they were free. Adam and God walked arm in arm in the cool of the day. Can you imagine having your quiet time, literally walking with God, arm in arm, naming the animals, just interacting intimately with your Heavenly Father? But in the tree of knowledge, fear, anger, and blame. You know the very first emotion that was experienced after they took the wrong fruit was fear. God said, Adam, where are you? Lord, I heard your voice in the garden and I ran and I hid, for I was afraid. He'd never hid. In fact, up to that point, he'd run to God, not from God. What's up with this, Adam? Different life now. Life is just different now. It's not that I don't love you or know you or whatever. It's all that. But now I'm afraid. I'm angry. My gosh, Cain and Abel, you have a murder happening just a few chapters into Genesis. They would have never dreamed of doing that when they were partaking of the right tree. But the wrong tree threw them into a tailspin. They're camping out in the wrong tree. Number three, the tree of life built on communion with God. That word should not be communication. Built on communion with God. If you think about it, when they were only partaking of the tree of life, all they had was communion with God. They didn't have a Bible yet. It was just, Lord, I love you. Let's commune. Let's walk together, etc., etc. Once they partook of the wrong tree, it was built on competence for God. Now, can I unpack this with you real quick? Once you write it down, give me your eyeballs. It seems to me like the picture of what happened to Adam and Eve is what happens to every one of us. Do you all remember the first time you came to Christ? For many of you, years and years ago, you've been in ministry now for years, but way back when you came to Christ, all you had to offer him was communion, wasn't it? You didn't know a lot of theology, you didn't have anything memorized yet, you just came to the Lord. In fact, remember the joy that struck you? You kind of wondered why everybody else didn't make that same decision you did that day. It's just, oh my gosh, it's great. All you had was communion with your Heavenly Father. In fact, when you shared your faith early on, you were probably heretical, weren't you? I mean, you didn't have the theology down, but you just were so in love with Jesus. Isn't it true the best evangelists are those early Christians? They're probably wrong in half what they say, but at least they love the Lord. They're out there. Now watch this. What happened to Adam and Eve? They started ingesting the wrong tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Can I tell you how this looked in my life? I grew up in a Christian home, going to church, kind of rebelled my early high school years, came to Christ, personal decision for Christ, my junior year of high school. I mean to tell you, I ingested the tree of life. I was just full of all the cliches, joy and love. Man, I became a little high school, public high school campus evangelist. I was out there in break time sharing Jesus and so forth. I was probably a little bit too radical. But here's what I noticed. I would say the first 18 to 24 months of my Christian life, I'm in the right tree. As I grew, notice I didn't say mature. As I grew older in Christ, I jumped to the wrong tree. And all of a sudden, or no, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, over time, my fulfillment of communion with God was eclipsed by the fulfillment of competence for God. Do you understand what I'm saying? I want to be competent Bible memorization, competent spiritual gifts, competent stewardship, competent tithing, competent fasting. All the stuff that makes you and I good Christians, we want to become competent at doing these things. And so what happened was, I was doing all the right stuff. You couldn't even notice the change on the outside, but on the inside, that wonderful first love, that fulfillment that came from communion with God, was shifted now to competence for God. And let me tell you what I've noticed, leaders. I noticed that God in His goodness, over time, will gently remove the fulfillment of a ministry built on competence for Him, to gently nudge you back again to communion with Him. You and I who have been serving God for years and teaching classes and Bible studies and small groups, it's all great. Just keep doing it. But isn't it easy to slip into the wrong tree? And it's really about your competence and how good you are as a Bible teacher or whatever it is you're doing. And God says, you know, it just doesn't impress me. What you're saying is right. Hey, what those churches and colleges I described in the beginning that were not life-giving, they're not wrong. They were right. What they were saying was exactly accurate. Just no life. You guys follow what I'm saying? Can I give you a picture of this? This word communion and competence are such good words to me. My family, my wife and two kids are all thespians. They love theater. In fact, I always dreamed I'd take my son to ball games and so forth. I take him to the theater. He loves going to New York and seeing Broadway shows. So we go up to Broadway every year and we see some New York shows. 2 or 3 years in a row, one of the shows that we happened to see was a show I'm sure you've all seen, or at least you've seen the movie. Do you all remember the story, Fiddler on the Roof? Do you remember that one? If you haven't seen it, let me describe it to you. Fiddler on the Roof has been a Broadway show, off or on Broadway, for years, for decades. The movie came out in the 70s. It's about this Jewish family, and the main lead character is a man named Tevye. Remember Tevye? This big, burly Jewish father, whose whole goal in the storyline is to marry off his daughters to good Jewish boys. Who have a lot of money, okay? So he enlists the matchmaker. Remember this? Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me. Okay, you get the point. Anyway, along the plot of the play, his daughters keep falling in love with the wrong boy. And he gets a little miffed by this because he's arranged this marriage. Remember this? Tradition, tradition. And they keep saying, but Daddy, I love him. And he goes, I don't understand this, you know? But all their conversations they have, this father-daughter conversation, starts making him think about his own marriage. And so in one very lilting scene, Tevye walks into his own house, finds his wife, probably scrubbing the floor, and he asks her a question. And because it's a musical, he sings the question. He simply says, do you love me? And she doesn't know what to say. She says, what kind of a question is that? He says, just answer me. Do you love me? And because she doesn't quite know how to respond, she sings back to him, for 25 years I've darned your socks, cooked your meals, washed your clothes. Now, do you see what's happening here? He's asking, do we have communion? And all she can say back is, I've got competence. True? I have this list. Look, it proves it to you. And I think sometimes God must be singing to us, do you love me? And all we can say back, ministers, is for 25 years I've taught your word, prayed my prayers, gone to church. You know, we've got our list. And God says, well, thank you. The outward behaviors are still intact. You've got a routine, maybe a rut for some of you. But I'm looking for the other tree. And if you have over the years slipped into the wrong tree, you're doing all the right things, but you probably lost power, You probably lost some joy, but you prop yourself up with this habit. Thankfully, it's a good habit. But there's no power to it. And God's calling us back to do the thing we're called to do from the right tree. Let's do another one. Number four. Tree of life thrives on relationship. Again, that's all they had. Love God, love people. In fact, isn't it ironic that Jesus, when he was asked to distill the kingdom of God, talked about relationship? He didn't talk about creeds and doctrines. He said, just love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbors yourself. When they got in the wrong tree, it began to thrive on rules and routines. In fact, I think Cain and Abel's argument that led to the murder was about how they're going to do the sacrifice and do the worship experience and which one's right. Remember this? It was all on how they're doing it. And God's saying, for Pete's sake, both of you I love. Okay, number five. Tree of life expresses confidence. Tree of knowledge, good and evil, imposes control. By the way, this is a leadership statement. When you've slipped into the wrong tree, one of the symptoms you're going to notice is you just start imposing control. Here's the rules. Here's what we're going to do. You got to be here by 7 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. Now, there's nothing wrong with rules. But I'm saying if all you have in your arsenal to motivate people is a regiment, you're doing something wrong in your leadership. Pardon me for stepping on your toes. I need this talk too sometimes. We're just imposing control. And by the way, sometimes I wonder if the local church of Jesus Christ in America worships at the altar of control. We just don't want to lose control. Let's just maintain control. Follow the bulletin. You know? Now, in the tree of life, expresses confidence. And that doesn't mean there's no control thing. But the whole point is it's an expression of confidence that the Spirit of God is at work. And even though the service might be messy or the meeting might not end on time. Sorry about that. Or whatever is happening, it expresses confidence that God's at work. And that's the bottom line, not control. Number six, tree of life. Acts out of devotion and gratitude. It's got the attitude of, my goodness, look what God's done for me. This is the least I can do in response. I have a sense of devotion. I'm grateful. It's that attitude. I'm happy to be here. Tree of knowledge, acts out of duty and obligation. Now, real quick, push the pause button. I think we have the other handouts. Who still needs a handout? Put your hand up if you need a handout. Okay, there's a couple of people in the back. Anybody else need them? Okay. Let's keep going. Number seven, tree of life offers love and grace, those words that we've nailed down theologically in our heads. The tree of knowledge, good and evil, offers law and guilt. It's that Wicked Witch of the West and wizard thing again. We just make people feel guilty if they don't sign up. In fact, here's the difference. In these two trees, when you're in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you find students say things like, all right, give me the clipboard, I'll sign up, whatever. And you know they're going to enter this thing with a bad attitude. You almost want to say, hey, just don't even sign up. But you need them to sign up. You need the numbers. So you'll manipulate or intimidate or whatever. You get speedier results in the tree of the knowledge. They're just not lasting results. If you got to do numbers overnight, you're in trouble in the right tree. Isn't this true? By the way, sidebar on this. When I first began doing solely college ministry for John Maxwell in 1983, I became his college pastor, moved to San Diego, blah, 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 blah. I remember John saying, Tim, we need a big, thriving college ministry. You know, John, if you know anything about John Maxwell, everything's big. And I said, John, let me just respond to you. I promise you, I will disciple and train and evangelist. I'll do the best I can. We'll build a thriving ministry. But you've got to give me time because you don't make disciples overnight. And he said, okay. And I tell you what, within about 5 or 6 years, we had quadrupled and all this was happening. But my point is, I knew, even though I didn't have this language yet, I've got to do this in the right tree, and it's going to take time. But we're going to have it last. Number eight. In the tree of life, there's faith in God and in people. We actually believe God's at work. We believe the best about people. Number eight, in the tree of knowledge of good and evil, there's a fear of loss of control. We're so afraid of losing something. We jump into that scarcity mindset. Things are running out rather than filling up. Number nine, tree of life is magnetic. Tree of the knowledge of good and evil, repulsive. Can I give you one snapshot of this? You're probably already jumping ahead of me in your brains. Wouldn't you agree that Jesus, his entire 3.5-year ministry, did it all out of the tree of life? I mean, he's the Son of God, obviously. But notice one of the first words you choose to describe his ministry, if you did it accurately, would be magnetic. He was magnetically pulling everybody. I mean, all kinds. There's Nicodemus, this religious leader, and then there's this prostitute and tax collector. Oh my gosh, thousands are following this man. And can I ask you, who's following the Pharisees? I wouldn't use the word magnetic. In fact, I might use the word repulsive. Am I right about this? Now, can I ask you a question? Were they wrong theologically? Mm-mm. No, they were. In fact, they not only kept all the laws, they added hundreds of laws, didn't they? But nobody's wanting to follow. Can you see ministries today in both of these camps? And nobody, listen, it's not, I don't know if this makes you mad. I don't mean to make you mad. It's not a theological thing. I think there are people in the Tree of Life from Baptist to Pentecostals. I think there's people in the Tree of Knowledge of Good and Evil from Baptist to Pentecostals. Okay, number 10, the last one. In the Tree of Life, the result is empowered service. You're energized. If you get tired, and you do get tired from time to time, you say with George Whitefield, I'm tired in the Lord's work, but not of the Lord's work. When you're in the wrong tree, you know what it feels like? A tired performance. I got this little dog and pony show going on, this little soft shoe dance. I'm trying to keep the kids entertained, and I'm tired. I feel like I'm performing for others. Does this ring true? Now, let me talk to you for just a minute about some thoughts that have run through my mind as a result of this little analogy. Do you all find from time to time that some students will enter your ministry just alive and excited and so forth and so on? They're really in the right tree. In fact, maybe aren't great theologically, but they're in the right tree. And over time, they slip over into the wrong tree. And what I've noticed, this is a phenomenon I've noticed the last 2 or 3 years. These 20-somethings are leaving the faith in droves. Some of them that were called into ministry are not only not going into ministry, they're walking away from Jesus. Now, I'm not talking about Calvin Arminianism. That's a whole other session for a whole other time. I'm talking about they're not caring to live for God anymore. And as I interview them over and over and over, I'm finding disillusionment. Disillusionment. Now, can I just share a thought with you? We can talk about this during the Q&A time more if you want to, but let me just share over 2 minutes here. What I believe happens is they have this picture of what it ought to look like. Somehow they can't seem to live up to this, or they find other people don't live up to this, and they become disillusioned. But let me tell you something. I believe it's very difficult to become disillusioned unless you're first illusioned. You have some illusion about this perfect thing that's going to happen. Do you not know people, forget students for a minute, do you not know people that stop going to church? And they say, well, I just think the church is full of a bunch of hypocrites. And they got this list of stories. And basically it boils down to, I expected Deacon so-and-so to come over and visit me when I was in the hospital and he didn't show up. So I just think you Christians are a bunch of hypocrites. Now, here's the deal. They have an illusion, don't they? That deacon's perfect or pastor's perfect or this perfect, elder, whatever. And it doesn't happen. And the minute it doesn't happen, listen to me. We now rub against this illusion and we become disillusioned. Here's what I would say to you. If we get in the right tree, it doesn't make us perfect. In fact, you can be in the right tree all your life and still have flaws and weaknesses and sins. But the heart is right. And where we get into trouble is when we're in the wrong tree and yet we still paint this picture of how it's going to look. You and I both know we will not live up to that. And people will get disillusioned. 20-somethings will get disillusioned. But it's because we've given them an illusion. We could talk for an hour on that. Let me just stop there. Go back to this. Well, now you look at these two columns, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Do you see that they simply represent approaches? Again, I've said it a million times, let me say it again. This is not about Bible accuracy or whatever. It's about, are we living out life from the right perspective, from the right paradigm, from the right tree, if you will, in this little model? I don't know if you heard me share this story before, but when I was in college, I remember meeting a friend named Bob. I met him while I was in college. He's remained a friend over the years. But Bob told me that he had joined a little church just outside of town. And when I asked him how he made the decision on which church he was going to join, he was really honest. He said, well, there's some really cute girls in this Bible study midweek. And, you know, he's just being honest. God had called him to this Bible study of very cute girls. So the funny part about the story happened when he goes to this Bible study and he notices across the circle of this group, this really cute girl. And Bob said, Tim, he told me this story afterwards, and he said, I decided to go up and just meet her. So he said, I went up and met her, and I said, hey, you know, you want to go out sometime? Yeah, I'd love to go out. That'd be great. So how about Friday night, 7 o'clock? That sounds great. So Bob drives over to her house and picks her up, opens the door, lets her in the car. He gets on the other side of the car, and they have this proverbial first date conversation. You all remember this first date conversation? What would you like to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? So finally, Bob decides, well, I'll just make a suggestion. I'm the guy. Let me lead the way here. Bob made the mistake of suggesting that they go see a movie, not in her theological camp. She'd come from it was a holiness church, and she just turned white as a ghost. You'd thought he just said, let's go commit adultery. No, no, we can't go do that. That's terrible. That's awful. You know, terrible. It's just terrible. And they cuss and then it's terrible and there's sins and we don't want to expose ourselves to that. And Bob thought, Bob immediately stepped back and said, I am so sorry. The last thing I wanted to do is offend you. I'm so sorry. Please, please forgive me for bringing that up. But Bob said, as I profusely asked for forgiveness, I was thinking in my head, what can I suggest? That's all I had with me in my head. You know, let's go see a movie and have dinner. So Bob went on and he said, the next thing I suggested was, well, it's Friday night. Let's go to the high school football game. Why does the ghost again? No, we can't go to the football game. That's terrible, terrible. Cheerleaders, short dresses, you'll lust. It's terrible. That's bad. And Bob said, Tim, again, I said, I am so sorry. Please, please forgive me. But Bob says, Tim, I got to tell you, inside my head, I'm thinking, I'm running out of options. He suggested going bowling. Why does the ghost? No, can't go bowling. They serve alcohol there. That's terrible. It's the devil's liquor. And Bob said, Tim, I must have suggested 6 or 7 things. None of them were on her list of options of behaviors. Now, this is a true story. I'm rolling on the dorm floor at this point. When I said, Bob, I cannot believe this is true. He said, it's true. It happened. It's true. And I said, well, what did you do? He said, I really didn't have any good ideas. So he said, we went out to 7-Eleven and got a Diet Coke. Not a Coke, a Diet Coke. No sugar. And I said, you mean that was the whole day? He said, that was the whole day. That's all I knew that was still in the boundaries, the parameters. And I said, well, did you just finally stop seeing her? He said, no, I really liked her. So we kept going out night after night, Coke after Coke. That's all we had for 6-7 weeks. That's all we did together. We sat in the parking lot and drank our Diet Coke and we talked. And Bob said, it all came to a climax about a month and a half into our dating relationship. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, I showed up at her house. We both got in the car and I said, listen, I've already told you I'm so sorry that I've suggested these wrong things, these sinful things, and I'm really sorry, didn't me. He said, I had a hard time saying sinful, but these sinful things, I'm so sorry. But he said, obviously you have a very sensitive conscience to the Bible and to the Lord, and he said, so I want you to suggest what we do. Bob said, I was floored by her response. First thing she did was grin really big and say, I thought you'd never ask. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? And this is what she said. She said, let's go parking. Now, in case that word's not in your vocabulary, Bob's thinking about, you know what I mean, the old-fashioned parking. Bob is thinking, surely she means something different by this term than what I understand this term to mean. You know, park and pray, park and praise, but certainly not what I'm thinking she means by this phrase. So Bob goes, well, I'll tell you what, you give me directions and I'll drive to this thing. Well, we'll do this thing called parking. So she gave directions. Bob said, Tim, I'm getting white knuckles. Sweat is beating up on my brow. She's leading us into the deepest, darkest part of the woods. I mean, we're in a forest area outside of town. And he said, we start driving around this one bend, and there's a clearing in the woods, and there's a whole bunch of cars. It's the college group from the church. They're out there in the back seats of their cars, all of them out there in the clearing. Bob said, at this point, I stepped on the brake, shifted into park, looked over and said, I am sorry. You're going to have to give me an explanation. What is up here? And Bob said, Tim, it's just what I thought. And he said, the next 20 minutes of our conversation was very, very enlightening. And I know today, leaders, you're going to hear this now, and you're going to hear it with different ears than a college student would. And this is going to be zany to you. But let me share it with you exactly as how Bob shared it with me. Because this is an exaggerated picture of what happens in a subtle way to so many 20-somethings. Bob said, that night I found out from this girl that their pastor in this church just dangled the congregation over hell every Sunday over the sins of movies, football games, and bowling. I'm guessing he didn't get to parking on the list of series yet, the teaching series yet or whatever. But so what they did basically in their head is they had this Christianity that was made up of outward behaviors. And since he hadn't gotten to these other things, man, they didn't think like Jesus did. They just had a list of behaviors and they were free to do whatever wasn't on that list. Now, you and I both know that's ridiculous, but that's what happens when we lead out of the wrong tree. It becomes about behavior modification rather than inward transformation. It becomes this thing where we don't ever think like Christ thinks. We just have this list, this checklist. And even though none of us intend to do this with our students, it's easier and simpler to do that list thing. And do you know why I say that? Because it's easier to follow rules than it is to follow Jesus. We don't call it rules, but we just have this code. This, I don't know, BSU code, BCM code, Chi Alpha code, Campus Crusade for Christ code, whatever you want to call it. But we just get this deal. This is our culture. This is our behaviors. This is how we act. And all I'm saying is, if we do it from the right tree, you'll get behaviors, but you'll get them coming to from the inside out. Now, for the sake of time, let me move forward. Let me give you very quickly some observations. I don't know. Are these typed in your notes already? Are they blanks? They're blanks? Okay, great. Let me just give these real quick. Okay, number one, we often begin our career as life-giving, but drift into life-grabbing postures over time. My guess is if you're like many, not all, but many, you started really well in your Christian life and your ministry life, but over time, slipped into the wrong tree. Number two, as we progress in leadership, we take pride in our competence more than our connection or communion with students. Okay? It's very, very, in fact, go ahead, Tim, go to number three. The third one, leadership built on rules is easier to implement than leadership based on relationship. In fact, my greatest illustration from my life is the umpteen dozen short-term mission trips I've led over the years, isn't it easier just to say, you know what, I've learned a deal. Do these seven things. Do not do these seven things. Do these seven. You know, you just boil it down to just do's and don'ts because I don't want you to get in trouble in Croatia, you know. So, I understand we need rules. I get it. We need them. But Paul the Apostle said it better than I can. The law didn't give me any life. It's always right. Just didn't give me any life. We rarely have a great interaction with the law. Four, our academic culture on our campuses fosters life-grabbing habits and attitudes rather than life-giving. Let me tell you what I mean by this. Some of you are on Baptist campuses. Some of you are on state campuses, but you're part of a Baptist collegiate ministry. And by the way, you and I both know Baptist Collegiate Ministries is doing great work. And by the way, I need to say, I love you guys. You're doing great work. But being on an academic setting, you know, just fosters the wrong tree. It's about knowledge, good and evil. It's about academic, you know. In fact, some of your schools just, well, they just breathe the wrong stuff. And it becomes about knowledge and data and all this stuff. And it almost seems non-academic to be relational. In fact, Chris, you and I were talking about this at lunch. You know, you're kind of a relational sort of guy. Can I say this? Is it all right to say in front of everybody here? You approach through relationship, and it's so difficult if it's just this academic, sterile information, data, research stuff. All of that's good, but we just need to make sure we're doing it from the right tree. Five, it is possible to discipline students and even fire staff while in a life-giving posture. Now, I put this in because you might be thinking right now, so you're just wanting to all be a bunch of syrupy, sweet, lovey-dovey, huggy-huggy, warm-fuzzy leaders. Mm-mm. No, I know life-giving leaders that do hard stuff. In fact, I try to do hard stuff from the right tree. In fact, this year, I just let one of our staff members go. It was horrible. I was hard. I love this young lady. She was a 28-year-old sharp young lady, but she was not gifted to do what we needed to do. And my vice president and I sat down with her and cried with her and let her go. And I'm telling you, we breathed life on her as she walked out the door. In fact, I helped her get another job. But the point is, you can do the hard stuff and still be in the right tree. This isn't wimpy leadership. It's doing all the hard things from the right tree. It's being the proverbial velvet-covered brick. By the way, didn't Jesus do all the hard stuff from the right tree? He had some hard conversations with people. And he let a rich young ruler walk away from him, didn't he? Loved him all the way. Probably cried. In fact, Ken, you and I were talking. Probably cried as he walked away. Didn't go chase him down. Okay. Number six. Life-grabbing leaders seek to be in control. Life-giving seek to be under control. And there is a huge difference. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to be helpful or not. But I want to give you, I'm going to see what's in your notes here. You see in your notes I have symptoms that I'm going to just let you read on your own. But I put some symptoms in there that I feel like are outward visible signals if you're doing leadership from the wrong tree. In fact, let me just read a few of them just to make sure you're on the page with me. Leadership starts nitpicking and keeps score. It's empty of power, offers no joy to people. Its goals merely damage control rather than trusting people with authority, etc., etc. These are signals of being in the wrong tree. Okay? Now, the next piece down, I want to give you one final piece to take notes on, and then I'm going to open it up for some questions and discussion. You see those two columns there, life-grabbing and life-giving. Oh, I guess we have. Let's just go ahead and... Are those all typed in for you? Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. Okay. I shouldn't say shoot. Let's go write them down. What do you say? Okay? I'm in the right tree here. Okay. life-grabbing, life-giving. These two trees foster two different kinds of leadership. And the tree of life, you have life-giving leaders. In the tree of knowledge, good and evil, you start producing life-grabbing leaders. And by the way, when I say life-grabbing, there are people that just kind of suck it out of you. They're not wrong, they're right, but they just suck it out of you, okay? Under life-grabbing, life starts getting scarce. It's almost like what's happening to the economy starts happening to you spiritually. We're running out. Things are scarce. Hold on to what you've got. I'm not going to give this away. I can't give this to you. Sorry, I can't. You stop being generous. Life isn't abundant. It's hard. It's scarce. And by the way, it's the opposite of the life-giving leader, where life is abundant. You may not know where the next one's going to come from, but you feel like you ought to give this away. And it's a faith step, isn't it? When you give that last, whatever it is, away to somebody. Because you sense God told you to do that. And you think, oh my gosh, I don't know where it's going to come from. But I love this risk-taking faith walk that I'm in. Where God's going to have to come through for me again. So two different spirits. Keep going. Life-grabbing, number two, you end up playing defense. Under life-giving, you play offense. By the way, since we're in the throw of football bowl season, I'm kind of happy that Ohio State won the Rose Bowl this year because, you know, the Big Ten teams have a history of losing in that game. And here, you know why they do? Because the Big Ten team comes in and they play not to lose. Whereas the Pac-10 team plays to win. They'll do innovative, creative plays and so forth. The Big Ten, just hold on to the ball, just run, just hold on, just do not throw it, just, you know. And you've seen people lead this way, haven't you? Some people lead not to lose and just want to do it all politically correct so I don't get fired. And then other people who are just doing life-giving things, innovative things. It's hard, isn't it? It's a little risky. Three, life-grabbing. The whole goal is to escape loss. Life-giving, pursue vision. Number four, under life-grabbing, your gifts are contained. The gifts of students are contained. We don't dare let them try to use them. They might mess up. Under life-giving, gifts are released. Under life-grabbing leaders, number five, it's guard and protect. Under life-giving, it's risk and seize opportunity. Six, under life-grabbing, you often find yourself in this mode of do the bare minimum. And by the way, don't you get angry with students that are in the do the bare minimum and still be a Christian? Well, we do it too as leaders. Here's the bottom. Here's the bare minimum I got to do to still keep my job and, you know, do this task. I love this. Under life-giving, go the second mile. And as soon as I wrote that down on my piece of paper, I thought to myself, Jesus taught this, didn't he? Remember the Sermon on the Mount? If someone asks for your coat, give me your shirt as well. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn the other cheek and say, go ahead and slap that one too. Blows people away. If someone asks you to walk a mile, go the second mile. All he was simply saying is, you're going to look really different if you're doing this thing in the right tree. 7. Under life grabbing, you think win-lose. Meaning if you're going to win, that must mean I have to lose. If you're in the right tree, the life-giving tree, you think win-win. You somehow believe that in the tree of life, God is going to have a way in His economy for you to win, me to win, the kingdom wins. And somehow, God just makes it happen supernaturally. Okay? Now, can I take a little bit of a risk here? Sure, Tim, go ahead. It's your risk. Okay, I will. In the next section of your notes, yes, next section of notes, I have some illustrations. I want to just give you some pictures, real life pictures, of what I would say would be illustrations of these two trees. The reason I say it's risky is I'm actually going to name some names, not people's names, but types of people. And I only do this, again, not to maim anybody's character, but just to show you so we can say, but for the grace of God, there go I. Lord, help me stay in the right mode, in the right tree, with the right perspective. Okay? Some of them are no risk, like number one. Number one, Jesus was in the tree of life. Number one, under the tree of knowledge, Pharisees. What a great contrast this was. And you saw the swing of the population totally magnetically drawn to Jesus and repulsed by the Pharisees. Now, let me remind you, the Pharisees weren't wrong. They just didn't breathe any life on anybody. All I'm saying is once your Christian leadership is all about, we're just theologically correct and we've got all the information, all the data, we're still... Well, you can be right all day, but I think we want to reach people, don't we? Jesus brilliantly reaches out, spends time with the least, the last, the lost, and oh my gosh, it's amazing. Now, look at this next one. Under the tree of life, pro-life advocates. Under the tree of knowledge of good and evil, anti-abortionists. Now, do you follow what I just said there? Both are for the same cause. They believe in the life of the unborn child. But the tree of knowledge, good and evil, approaches it completely the wrong way. They're bombing clinics and trying to demonstrate, kill doctors, whatever they're trying to do. But they're doing God's will the wrong way, which is the most acceptable sin in the church today, doing God's will our way. But the tree of life people, same cause, same purpose, same mission, same Bible verses they believe, but they're doing it by breathing life, by providing alternatives to abortion to girls and blah, 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 blah. You see the difference. It's a similar cause, two different approaches. And what you choose to approach a ministry tells you a lot about what tree you're in. 3, tree of life. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I have been down countless times to the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. If you've never been to Atlanta to see it, you need to go see it. You'll see movie clips and see artifacts from the marches in the 50s and 60s. Your heart will soften. You'll probably need to take a Kleenex. It's powerful what those folks went through, both whites and blacks, to march for civil rights. I believe even though Dr. King was far from perfect, he led that movement from the Tree of Life. Remember? He said, no violence. We're not going to shoot guns back. We're not going to throw fire hoses back in their face like they do ours. We're going to peacefully demonstrate. We're going to talk. We're going to sit in. We're going to do these things. But it's going to be peaceful, not violent. And we believe love beats power in the end. Now watch this. I want to be careful here. I don't mean to offend anybody. But it seems to me like almost every civil rights leader since Dr. King has been from the wrong tree. It's like Dr. King said, I have a dream. They're saying, I have a complaint. Who wants to follow a complaint? You follow what I'm saying? One of the reasons Barack Obama won the last election, pardon me, I'm just going to be honest with you, isn't necessarily they like all his policies. I think people are seeing, policies aren't so good sometimes. But they loved, he seemed like he was in the right tree. They didn't know what to call it. It was hope, it was belief and all this other stuff. Now, all I'm saying is, John McCain and Hillary Clinton were old school, power up, I got the answer, don't want to do. You know what I'm saying? It was a style. I'm not talking about political issues. I'm talking about style. Wrong tree. I love John McCain. I voted for him. Wrong tree. Seemed like a nice enough guy. But people smell two different trees. Now, this is a good point. You can be wrong in your issues and in the right tree. That's scary, isn't it? And you can be right in the right tree. The problem is you can be wrong in the right tree or right in the right tree, wrong in the left tree, wrong right in the left. But all I'm simply saying is, it seems to me like what you have is two different sets of leaders trying it from two different approaches. Number 4, tree of life, Mary. Tree of knowledge of good and evil, Martha. Remember this story, Mary and Martha? What a great picture, I think, that evening when Jesus visits the home of Mary and Martha. Can I ask you a question? This is a Bible memory question. That night, what was Martha doing? Talk to me. Serving dinner, right? Serving Jesus, yeah. But she's getting all the dinner ready. And do you remember, the reason you know she's in the wrong tree is because as she's getting all the food for the people, she's seeing what's happening in that living room with full of people, right? You know she is because she eventually goes in and whines to Jesus, okay? She's getting the baked beans and looking in, making sure, is somebody noticing my ministry here? Nobody's noticing my ministry here, you know? And do all my food. And when she finally goes in, she says, Lord, don't you care that my sister's left me to do all the serving alone? That is a person in the wrong tree. No one's doing it. Just kill me. Nobody's helping me, you know? And we've all felt this way, haven't we, in our ministries? Nobody notices. I'm doing all this thing by myself. Oh, my gosh. And the reason we know she's in the wrong tree is because Jesus doesn't give her the response she's really looking for. Don't you think Martha was really looking for this response? Oh, Martha, you're awesome. You are awesome. I can't believe you're doing all this. Mary, get your fan in there right now. Help your sister. I mean, I think she's looking for some help here. But Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered. One translation said distracted by so many things. Only one thing is necessary, and Mary has chosen it. Now, what's Mary doing? Sitting at the Lord's feet, soaking in the Word. And Jesus was not implying at that point, just sit still the rest of your life and listen to me. He was saying, you get in the right tree, and when you get up from your bottom and you go do something, it will be from the right tree. I believe Mary does a number of things after this, but one of which, she breaks an alabaster vase, pours it over the feet of Jesus, and Jesus says, this act of worship will be remembered forever. Amazing different response. To Martha, he says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered. To Mary, he says, this will be remembered forever. What's the difference? Does he like broken bottles more than baked beans? Mm-mm. No, the deal is, one was done from the right tree, one was done from the wrong tree. It's not even what ministry you're doing, it's how you're doing it. It's how you're approaching this thing. 5. Tree of life, true Christianity. Notice I said true Christianity. There's a lot of people that name the name Christian, and you and I both know they're not walking, much less living in the right tree. I think tree of knowledge, Islam, and I want to be careful here. I don't know what your backgrounds are, but if you study Islam, and I mentioned this morning, we're working with several Muslim countries. We're working with Afghanistan, Iran, Egypt, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria. When I get over there, I see that they have this religious code. It's all in the wrong tree. In fact, can you imagine trying to live just the Christian creeds with no power from the Holy Spirit? Can you imagine? Can you imagine over there, you know why they have the women wear all the burqas? Because they got no Holy Spirit working in them about the lust issue. They're just cover yourself up, and I'm going to get ticked off at you if anything happens wrong inside of me. And then they kneel down 7 times a day and pray and all this other stuff. All I'm simply saying is, it's doing a bunch of religious stuff from the wrong tree. And eventually, we can get in the same state of anger. No wonder they're angry. Okay. 6. I said this before. In the tree of life are people from Baptist Pentecostals. In the tree of knowledge of good and evil, people from Baptist Pentecostals. And I only say that not to make fun or anything. It's simply to say, it really doesn't matter. You can be anybody. And in the right tree, you can be anybody in the wrong tree. Now, we'll probably need to stop here in just a second. But I want to stop here and just allow at least for a few minutes of your observations. You men and women have been serving, some of you, for very, very many years. And I'm sure that things have run through your mind. Maybe you disagree with something. That's totally fine. This is a dialogue. But what are your thoughts? What are your questions, insights? I just would love to hear from some of you and just hear what you're thinking. Any thoughts at all? Anybody? As you look over the stuff you've jotted down, anything you want to say?
Second on
moving from
the tree of knowledge to the tree of life, like what that could look like.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. Yeah, at the very bottom, I talk about what a leader does to return to the tree of life. What I simply did is put a list here of things I have had to do because I find myself in the wrong tree pretty regularly. In fact, you know what I've noticed? I have a Tarzan gift. I'm swinging from tree to tree in the same day, several trees. Several trees. I mean, I'll wake up in the morning with my kids. Love you guys. It's great. By 10 o'clock. What in the world are you? You know, and they're going, Dad, what is up with you? You know, I've slipped into the wrong tree. As a parent, as a husband, as a Christian leader, I get all bent out of shape. I'm doing it in the flesh. There's all kinds of words you can put to this, but it's simply doing this stuff. And here's what we've done. We've mastered doing all the right ministries from the wrong tree. That's what scares me. It would be great if it was a signal we started robbing banks. Oh, that's a tip off. I'm robbing banks. Shouldn't be doing that. But we can still do all the Christian stuff from the wrong tree and no life. And it's no wonder the world looks at us and says, well, why would I want to be like you? They do sometimes. And they see us as narrow-minded, judgmental, anti-gay, anti-female. I mean, it's all kinds of stuff. Is whether it's right or wrong, it's put on us because they've seen people in the wrong tree. Anyway, okay, so the list is, this is written in your notes, isn't it? Okay, great. Yeah, check your attitude at the beginning of the day. What I try to do is when I hop up out of bed, I just say a prayer. And as I pray, I just say something like, it's different words every day, but Lord, help me to do the stuff I'm going to do today from the right tree. I pray this about this event. Lord, help me to do this from the right tree. I pray if when I leave tonight, if they forget nothing else, they say, there was a guy that loved us. There was a guy that he's on the journey with us, and he didn't claim to have all the answers, but he's in the right tree. He's in the tree of life, and he breathed life that day on us. Number two, seek to add value to everyone you meet. This is the third year in a row I've made a New Year's decision about a standard. It's not so much a goal, but a standard I want to live by. If I have 10 minutes or more with anybody to talk, I want to do or say something that adds value to their life. It may be a word of encouragement, a compliment, maybe recommending a book, maybe this or that, maybe giving them something, maybe giving them money. I don't know. But if I have to, now, if I only have 5 minutes at a gas station, I'm not holding myself, you know, bless you, son, bless you. I'm not doing that to the other customers in the gas station. But if I have 10 minutes or more, I've got a little habit now. I want to do something that adds value to the life. That keeps me in the right tree because I'm thinking that way now. How can I give? How can I give? How can I give? How can I give? Third, stop fighting the good versus evil battle and begin fighting the life versus death battle. Please hear me. I know some of you God's given you a burden for certain issues, and it is a good versus evil. I recognize the existence of good and evil. I really do. I'm with you 110%. I just think when I watch the life and ministry of Jesus, he was more in the life and death battle. And I will find prostitutes' lives being transformed as I call them to life. They will get the good down. But it wasn't, remember what I said this morning, he didn't go up to prostitutes and say, you know, prostitution's just wrong, it's just really wrong. He didn't do that. He breathed life on people, and that made them want, it made Zacchaeus want to give back 4 times what he had taken as a tax collector, or Matthew, or whatever. It's because he breathed life. So I would say consider, just pray about this, consider saying, Lord, help me to jump into this life-death battle rather than this right-wrong, good-evil. And by the way, you know one of the reasons that's important? Isn't there a little bit of good and a little bit of evil in every one of us? Even as a follower of Christ. Man, if God removed all the evil from the earth at midnight tonight, I'd be gone. Number four, beginning to develop a small group of potential leaders. This may be my bias, but I have found that by discipling, developing, mentoring, pouring into young leaders, it keeps me in the right tree. Because I'm thinking about developing people. Not just getting ministry tasks done. Talk about this life-giving truth to your... By the way, steal this if it helps you. Steal it and teach it to your leaders, your student leaders. Talk about this so there's other people that know the language. If it helps, I'm not saying this is brilliant, but if it helps you, this helps us in our office. From time to time in our office, we'll look at each other. I get a little emotional about this. Because sometimes my staff has to say to me, I think you're in the wrong tree. And I'm their boss. And after I fire them, no, I'm just kidding. But don't you think it's healthy to have good accountability in your team, even with you, the key leader, to say, you tell me if I'm in the wrong tree. I don't want to lead like the Pharisees today. And then the last one, be a good finder and a grace giver. Just find something good about everybody you meet and give grace. That's just a great posture to have. Okay. Thank you for reminding me to do that. I'm sorry. I know we need to stop, but yes, question in the back. Can you talk real loud?
Yeah. My question was, you said something about someone could come from the tree of life and belong. I wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, you want me to explain that?
Yeah. It's kind of just based on your earlier thing about believing God.
Yes. Yeah. I suppose if you put all of it lumped together, It would be impossible. I'm just saying, I think sometimes you can have a good posture of heart where you're loving and gentle, and yet you can be really fighting for the wrong issue. That's what I mean, yeah. And I think we see that sometimes, just people that you just know their heart's right, but oh my gosh, they're just completely wrong about the issue. And what I'm pushing for today is, Lord, help us to be right and full of life. Okay. Other thoughts, questions? Max, anything from you? Okay. All right. Well, let me pray for you and we'll stop. I think we need to take a stretch break. Father, I pray you just help us to be doers of the word. Thank you for this time we've had to simply look at simple truth. But you've called us back to the kinds of people we need to be, that we want to be for our spouses, our kids, the students that are under our care. Father, forgive us when we just jumped into the wrong tree and gotten impatient. Help us, Father, to leave this event just breathing life on others. Help us to be velvet-covered bricks. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right, we'll see you in 10 minutes. What I am going to do is what John just said. I'm going to do my best. This is not so much a teaching session, but just a practical idea session on how you can begin to extend your ministry to outside clusters and demographics on the campus that wouldn't already be a part of your BCM group, okay? So whether it's athletes, first-year students, student government, et cetera, we've designed some clusters and packages that will help you add value to those. Now, I want to start, if you don't mind, and even if you do, I want to start with this athletic habitude thing. And so, Tim, I know you're kind of getting ready back there. If you can switch the keynote session from the one we were just on to the one that I think will be entitled Athletic Habitudes, that would be outstanding. Let me tell you what I'd like to do, just so you'll kind of have your bearings at the beginning of this session. John just mentioned that we have developed this athletic program. I think I even mentioned it in my first session. What we decided to do was we decided to take the Habitudes series, which many of you have been exposed to, where you've worked with students or student leaders, just going through the images and the conversations to develop leaders. And we decided to take the first set of those Habitudes and do an athletic version of them. So just to cut to the chase, we developed a license and a kit that a leader would take, either an athletic director or a campus minister or a chaplain, a football coach, and they would take this program in and they would do one habitude a week at some point during the training time. So whether it's a football team or track team, baseball team, basketball team, or all the above. I mean, North Carolina, University of North Carolina, has taken all their first-year athletes, all sports, male and female, through Habitudes. And what it is, it's a disc with me teaching one Habitude at a time for about 9 minutes. I'm in a weight room. I'm in a sweatsuit, looking pretty studly. And I know it's Photoshop. It's Photoshop. But anyway, I'm teaching the Habitude, but I'm using sports stories. I'm talking about Kobe Bryant and Vince Young and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And at the end of my talk, then I interview an athlete, either an NCAA athlete or a pro athlete, and we're talking about that Habitude and how that's played out in their life, either character, discipline, personal growth, responsibility. And we're talking about how this plays out in their life. And then the screen fades to black and two questions come up for the athletes to talk about. So, the very first team, this may not be pleasing to you, but I'm just going to say it. The very first team that realized they really needed this was the Texas Longhorn football team. Now, you might agree, yes, they did need this desperately. If you remember, right about the time Vince Young was graduating, remember about 4 years ago or so, they just had some character trouble on their team. The guys were getting arrested. I think there were 7 arrests in September of that season, and it was just awful. And Mack Brown said, we got to do something. And somehow, I think it was a God thing, we got in touch with the University of Texas. And they said, we need this. We'll do it. Help us get ready. And so we went out and trained them. And what they did was they had a point man, his assistant athletic director, George Wynn, and Ken Rucker and 6 other coaches divided all their first-year athletes and then other athletes they felt like needed to be in the program. And they took them through these Habitudes. And then they split them up into small groups after they all watched the 9-minute video. So listen, this is really cool. They had their football team going through it in six small groups where they're talking and getting transparent, talking about their past and their backgrounds. And some of these players never had a dad that they knew and didn't have any moral compass in their hands. And what's really cool, this is what I love, and I got to hand it to UT. They made sure, Ken Rucker ended up taking over this program. He made sure every one of his six small group leaders were believers. So they not only could talk about character, but they could talk about what you really need is a relationship with God. And they have led so many players to the Lord. It's been so cool. Ken Rucker, he's in one of my mentoring groups now, and he says, man, we're leading more people to Christ. Well, the Habitudes simply opened up the conversation. It's just it's a way to open up the conversation that leads you to a personal relationship with Christ. And that's our goal. So anyway, what I want to do in this session is I'm going to walk through some slides that will talk through how we've done it. And this is not a brag or a boast. In fact, we're still learning. I'm sure we haven't figured this whole thing out. But please don't hear this as a sales pitch. You don't have to do this. But if it sparks an idea in your mind, hallelujah. That's great, okay? Yes, John.
Could you tell the OU fans that Malcolm Kelly is on one
of them? Oh, yeah, Malcolm Kelly. Actually, we got three OU players that are in these interviews. More OU players are being interviewed as great illustrations of these Habitudes than any other team. Now, we hope to get some Cowboy players on there, too. Amen, OSU folks. It's really been fun. I just went out this last school year to meet with all the athletic department at OU. Joe Castiglione, the AD there, brought me in, and we talked about these new athletes, and it was a marvelous time. I was so impressed with the staff, and I'm praying and hoping that one day before the year's over that OU will sign on and do this as well. So anyway, all that to say, let's just walk through a little bit about this. Tim, are you back there to click slides? Go ahead and click to the next slide. I'm going to give you a quick overview for the sake of those of you that just don't know much about growing leaders. My vice president did this, and so it's very general, and I feel funny talking about me and my organization. But Growing Leaders was started in 2003. Some of you, I've known you even before that time when I was working with John Maxwell. But our sole goal and mission for Growing Leaders is to partner with ministries and colleges, so whether they're Christian colleges or state schools, and deliver tools to develop next generation leaders. Okay? Along the way, we've learned that issues like emotional intelligence and character development are huge, and so we develop programs that use the Habitudes to build those too. But our whole goal is to develop a new generation of leaders. Okay? There you go. Okay? There it is. We accomplish this by developing and providing character-based leadership training and resources specifically created for millennial generation students, the ones that you're seeing today on your campus, born between 1984 and 2002. So we're working, by the way, with high schools as well as colleges. The runner-up state champion in Georgia this year was doing Habitudes. The runner-up in Florida is doing Habitudes. Now, you can tell, I got a great sense of humor. I'm always claiming, well, it's the reason they're winning is because they're doing Habitudes every week. You know, I know better than that. They've got great athletes. But what they're finding is sometimes these very gifted athletes are the ones that desperately need a moral compass. They've been prima donnas all their life, doing whatever they want to off the field because they're so gifted on the field. And we're simply saying, let's lead our lives well and build good men and women, not just good players. So that's our goal. Okay, go ahead and click to the next slide, Tim. Some of our partnerships, not all, but some of them are University of Texas, North Carolina, Duke. The Kansas City Royals has their minor league clubs going through this these Habitudes. In fact, I go out to spring training every year. I'll go out in March before they start their season and get to talk to all the players in Arizona, and I love it. I feel like a pastor to these ball players who are all wanting to be major league players, and I remember dreaming about that myself. I never actually played pro ball, but I dreamed about it, okay? So, but it's fun for me to get to be in Arizona with those guys. Florida State, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, Baylor, we do a lot of FCA stuff. Boys and Girls Clubs, et cetera, et cetera. So those are just some of the programs that are doing it. We have 13 NCAA athletic programs doing Habitudes right now, and they vary. Some of them take their first-year athletes through it because they want to build a culture, and they figure if we get the students when they're first year, they're going to start learning to think this way. And so we have year one, year two, and we're shooting the video for year three this month. So we'll have 3 years of program ready. But here's another cool thing. Duke University, very brilliant school, has chosen to take their senior ball players through it to be mentors for their first-year athletes. So they decided to go the back door. Let's get our senior, very influential guys and start pouring into the younger players. So they're the mentors to get these young guys in it. Now, some schools, like Jacksonville State, has just the whole entire football team going through it. Or Miami has the whole football. In fact, get this, University of Miami, do you know anything about Miami? Usually they have some character problems there. I mean, just say it. They do. They're great, gifted athletes. But most of those boys, I think, most would say, I don't even know my dad. I don't even know what my dad, who my dad is. They get to this ball club, and this is so cool. The chaplain, hear me, Christian ministers, the chaplain came to me and said, I think I can sell this to my head coach. And he got the Habitude program on faith, went down there, and they're doing, the coach said, we're taking our whole team through this. I'm going to require our players to go to chapel. They're going to go through this stuff. So it's kind of cool. I got it. My hat's off to this guy. He just is doing it with the entire team and building the hearts of these players. So it's been fun. That's just a great quote. I don't know if you've heard Charles Malek. He just said the university is a clear-cut fulcrum with which to move the world. One of the best ways of creating the macrocosm is through the handle of the universities, in which millions of youths destined to positions of leadership spend between 4 and 10 years of the most formative period of their lives. More potently than by any other means, change the university and you change the world. Amen? That's probably why you do what you do. Okay, next slide. Some of you have seen this chart before, so I'm just going to go through a couple of points on it. But I developed this chart when I work with coaching staff. In fact, I took Nick Saban and the athletic director's staff through this at Alabama. That was an interesting talk. But we walk through the generations and how the coaching staff generation is often very different than the student athlete. Would you agree with that? I know every youth generation is kind of weird to the older generation, but these Generation Y kids are very different. In fact, I call the kids born after 1990 Generation IY, not just Y, because of the impact of iTunes, iPods, iPhones, iChat, and the fact that life is about I. It's kind of a self-absorbed generation. So we just help them see the reason they need images, conversations, and experiences, and the reason they need to talk about character and leadership is because they don't have what you got. They're growing up a little less convinced of the gospel than or about character needs than you did. If you'll notice across the top, from left to right, I just outlined the 5 generations that are alive today. And by the way, there's a 6th generation that's just been born since 2002. They're called homelanders. Have you heard of them? Homelanders are called homelanders because the first full year of their existence, the Department of Homeland Security was in existence. They're going to be an extremely safety, security conscious generation of kids. And you think you've got helicopter parents now? Watch out. The next shift of parents are going to be so guarded with these kids. That's the prediction. But in any case, the ones that you're seeing now are Generation Y, off to the right, 1984 to 2002. Now, do you see the life paradigm line there across the top from left to right? For the seniors, it was manifest destiny. For the builder generation, the ones that went through the Great Depression, it was be grateful you have a job. For the baby boomers, the pig and the python generation. And by the way, you know why they're called the pig and the python, aren't you? That big lump of population that went through the United States, 78 million of us, called baby boomers, went through. And the reason that's significant is because since we were such a large generation, we were the targets of books, government focus, marketing, advertising. Everybody wanted the dollar and the attention of the baby boomers. So we grew up with lots of attention. We thought we were all that. It's true, as a generation. Now, that's key because look at our life paradigm. You owe me. We were a very entitled generation growing up. In fact, during the 1960s, it was a decade of turmoil and demonstrations and riots because we just wanted to reinvent everything. We thought we were the deal. Now watch this. This was followed by Generation X. I think we have a lot of Xers in this room today. They're the ones born between 1965 and 1983. I gave them the life paradigm, relate to me. Let me tell you why I did. Generation X was the generation of the birth control pill. So what you have is a booming generation before them that was just, oh my gosh, 78 million kids. It shrunk rapidly due to the birth control pill and Roe versus Wade in 1973. With that, you had a shrinking population. It was a bust, baby busters, of babies, not a boom. And the reason that's significant is because the Xers grew up not feeling like they were the targets of lots of attention. They weren't the target of the advertiser, the marketer, and mom and dad. In fact, mom and dad were out trying to find themselves somewhere. So it was a very difficult time throughout the 70s and 80s growing up if you were an Xer trying to just figure out what's going on? And so the life paradigm was, I want an authentic relationship. The word community became big in the 90s when we were looking for community with those Xers as they came through. Now the millennials are here, or Generation Y. And I gave them the life paradigm. Life is a cafeteria. Now let me tell you why I assigned that paradigm. Have you ever stopped to think that these students that you're ministering to and serving, nearly every major decision of their life, it's like a buffet. There are so many options in each category. And in the same way you go into a cafeteria and you say, I'm going to make up my meal for myself, a little bit of roast beef, a little bit of mashed potatoes, a little bit of Jell-O, a little bit of pumpkin pie, this is my meal, made for me. They want to do it for, that's how they make their decisions. They'll make educational decisions this way. They'll go to 3 different colleges, one of them overseas. They'll make spiritual decisions this way. They'll come up to you and you may be shocked, but a little bit of Jesus, a little bit of Buddha, a little bit of Eastern mysticism, kind of shake it together. I've made it my own faith. It's a cafeteria. They don't have to buy an entire LP anymore. It's one song at a time on iTunes. It's a cafeteria. And I got my own playlist with Michael Jackson, Madonna, Kanye West, Taylor Swift, whatever. They've got their own little deal going that's a buffet. And so they expect a customized deal. Now, I didn't say they're right about this, but this is the world that we adults have created for them. So it's just one big cafeteria. Now, notice their attitude toward authority. For the seniors, it was respect them. For the builders, endure them. For the boomers, replace them. For the busters, it was often ignore them. But for the millennials, I've noticed it's choose them. They actually don't mind following a leader. They want to follow a leader. But show me you're credible first. I will follow the most credible leader I can find. And remember, life's a cafeteria, so they'll choose which leader. Have you ever noticed? They may be a part of 3 or 4 campus ministries and 2 churches. And they'll go to whatever deal's going on, that's kind of their deal. They choose to follow a leader that kind of fits who they are. And once again, but here, listen, it's good news. They are choosing their leaders. They want to follow a credible leader. You know what, for the sake of time, let me just stop there. But let me stop and let you talk for a minute. As you guys look at this chart, I know some of it's rather small print. But does anybody have a comment you want to make or a question? Some of you have seen this before. Anybody want to just do a little pushback on it or ask a question about it at all? Yes, go ahead.
I have a question, if it's okay.
Sure.
So your lab, the materials that you're using with the athletes.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed you have 2 sets of books, one more Christian than
yeah.
the other.
Yeah.
And is that one
you use? Good question. Did you all hear the question? I'm glad you brought that up because I have not done that yet. We have 2 versions of Habitudes. Okay? Let me just show them to you. I've got them all up here. We have a faith-based version, and these would be the faith-based books right here. There are 4 of them. Okay? Book 1, Book 2, Book 3, and Book 4. And a school like Charleston Southern University, one of your sister schools in South Carolina, is taking all their athletes, male and female, through book 1 of the faith-based version. So, because at Christian school, they're doing the Bible verses. So, book 1 is The Art of Self-Leadership. I often recommend you start with this one first. Lord, help me lead me before I lead anybody else. It's about character and discipline and responsibility. Book 2 is on the art of connecting with others, how leaders do relationships. Good for RAs, campus ministry, team leaders, etc. Book 3 is The Art of Leading Others, and book 4 is The Art of Changing Culture. It's a little more advanced. How do we look at the macro, and how do we change the micro to impact the whole campus, our community, this nation, etc.? Now, that's the faith-based version. We decided to do a values-based version. It's these 4 books here. In fact, we only have 1 sample copy of these here, but it's the same 4 books. But they're the values-based. Now, here's the difference. Same images, virtually the same stories, but no Bible verses. So we'll do these with corporations, state schools, and by the way, with the state athletic habitudes, we're doing the values-based. Yeah. So, yeah, you get the picture. We work with a Christian school. It's faith-based stuff. We do a state school. Now, once again, the cool thing is this has no Bible verses, but it leads into a conversation where you can begin to build the bridge to the gospel. Okay? Yes, question in the back?
Tim, when you say values-based, are those same values in the faith-based series? Do you address the same values?
Yes, yes. We only use the term values-based because that's what the world understands. Value-based leadership means this is leadership being taught from a moral compass that you have to build lead out of character. Yeah. But it's the very same issues and topics and values in both books. One has Bible verses, one does not. Okay? And we've kind of tested this with some of the most secular schools, and we've revised over the years because, you know, sometimes they'll even say, I'm still going to get in trouble with this one. But we've come up with two different versions that nearly any state school would say, yeah, this is what we need, and it's language that we understand. So, yes, go ahead.
Deal.
Okay, great, Neil. Thank you for asking that question. We do one book a year with the athletes. So several schools are just starting with book one this year, one habitude per week for a season. There are 13 habitudes. So Texas actually uses it during the season, and then they bring in new players, like for spring training, and they'll do another shift of book one for those new athletes coming in. But it's one book per year. So this would, four books would literally... Well, both. Texas does two times the same year the same book. So they do go through it in one semester. They would call it a season. But then they do the same book another round in the same year. So I don't know whether you describe that. Yeah, two shifts per year. Here's what I would say to you. For some of you that are applying this to not athletes but just students in general, you can get through one of these books, one image per week in a semester. If you go September 1 to finals, you can get through, there's 13 of them. You get the, there's about 16 weeks in a semester or 15 weeks. You can get through 13 in one semester. So does that answer your question, Neil? Okay. Now, I should tell you this. The athletic habitudes, we shot the videos, they're all values-based. Because even with a Christian school, we go in, you guys can bring in the scripture. You have the values-based coaches' guides. They come with coaches' guides, PowerPoints, all the stuff you need to do it. But you add the scripture, but you're able to have video that you could use at Jacksonville State, OSU, OU, or, you know, OBU. Yes, go ahead. Interesting. Wow. I'm thrilled to hear that. And I know they're not all great, but we feel like there's been a culture change the last 4 years. And I hand it to the coaching staff. They've decided, Habitudes happens to be the pictures they're looking at, but I think the coaches really have made a difference pouring into, they've become mentors to these young guys. So it's been cool.
Is there a coach's guide with the Christian base?
Yes, there is. Yeah. So like at OBU, yeah, you'd use the Christian version and the Bible verses are there. Yeah, yeah. So, yes.
Coach Mark Wilson, he's our defensive coordinator. He can share what
I would love that. Would you mind taking a minute? You're at Oklahoma Panhandle State University?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I would love. Do you mind taking a minute and sharing what you're doing? That'd be great. Come on up. Cool.
I'm shy in front of people.
Yeah, I can tell you are. How are you, man?
Good to meet you.
You too. Does he need a mic? Can you hear him okay?
I can be loud.
Okay.
Loud enough?
He's a coach.
You know, Jay introduced it to us, and our head coach is also, we were kind of looking for something different to do with the team and the FCA, and we, as a state school, gets a little touchy,
yeah.
But we're pretty strong with our coaching staff and where our faiths are tying in, but we wanted something that worked really well with our FCA, and in our FCA, 80%, 90% of it is our football guys.
Wow.
We're still working on the rest of the athletes.
Yeah.
But the thing we've noticed more than anything, and some, well, I'll just say it from a personal standpoint, as just a coach and a leader, that book, the first book especially, you know, it's easy to teach a kid what to do, but when you get to the why and how to lead and all these issues...
Yeah.
Even from my own standpoint, coaching 9 years, that book teaches you how to work on yourself first,
mm-hmm.
which is the most important point. You take an 18-year-old kid
yeah.
who hasn't had to lead before,
mm-hmm.
who has a tremendous outgoing, sparkling personality, and they're great.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't know what the heck they're doing. So the book itself was really phenomenal. There's probably four or five kids especially that we have that just have these dynamic personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to work on themselves first, and I'm not exactly shy either. I'm pretty good at being out and about, but it was just so beneficial to have it. Where do we start? And then as you go through the book, you could just see how it increment by increment builds, and the first topic is not ignored by week 13. It's continually built upon, where you don't just forget about it. You know, you don't pick up a self-help book and chapter 9 is different than chapter 2. It was a nice gradual progression that didn't overspeed the kids in any way whatsoever. And I don't mean this in a bad way at all. The best thing about it, in and out, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we had one coach that actually said, well, that's probably all the church I'm going to get this week.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can take that hour-long time we have for FCA,
yeah.
And we can play with it and modify it and fit it,
yeah.
But the message that we're sending, and depending on how we want to modify it that time, really 15 minutes.
Yeah,
and
that's
I think
cool.
Your video's 9 minutes plus a couple minutes at the end, and it, bless our kids. But so anyway, how are we doing over here? You know, there's this attention deficit that we're flipping channels all the time. So it was a short, compact message, and it wasn't overcomplicated with, you've got this point, this point, this point, this point, this week. No, it's here's a picture, take it, go.
Yeah.
You know, it's been remarkable, not just for many of our kids, but even our staff as well. There's 4 of us coaches that have been going to FCA that had not gone in the past.
Wow.
That's a testament to it
that's
in
neat.
And of itself. I mean,
cool.
We saw the book, we went, yeah, all right, we're going. And that was it. I mean, it was pretty simple, so.
Well, I'm proud of what you're doing. Now, are you frequency? Are you meeting once a week and
once
doing
that? Wednesday nights.
Okay, Wednesday nights, and you're doing one habitude. When you do habitudes, that's what you're one. Okay.
We do one. We go through. We'll have another coach.
One
or 3 or 4 of us will go up and either pull from the study guide that's part of it, or whatever that coach has felt like they have been touched by, that may be a separate scripture reading, but related to it. But again, like I said, it's 15, 20 minutes. That's 8 minutes of us and 9 minutes of you.
Yeah.
They get 2 channels and we're done.
Yeah. That's cool. Good.
And then Mythbusters is on right after that.
Which doesn't hurt. Yeah.
Great show. I mean, we go watch film.
Yes, that's right. Film. Of course. Game, yeah. film time. Thanks. I appreciate that very, very much. Good. Yes. There's 2 different ways that teams are doing it right now. We may come up with 17 different ways. Charleston Southern has a habitude book in the hands of every one of their students. They put it in their locker, and I'm so proud of the basketball team. They've really picked up on this. The basketball coach has bought into this, and they're writing it. I don't know if you've seen these habitude books, but there's places to jot down your thoughts, like I hate this one because I need it, you know, or whatever, you know. But there's places to jot down your responses. So they decided every player gets a book. Some schools have done the in-between thing where they say, we're loaning you the book. You can read it, and there's only 2 pages per chapter, but give them back to us because we're going to use them next year. And then some schools say, we're just watching the video. There's no books in your hands. You won't read the book anyway, and that's fine. At least there's conversation going, you know, throughout the year. So, all right. Other questions? Yes, in the back. I'm sorry. Oh, yes. Here's the kit. If a team or a school or you guys wanted to get this athletic habitudes, you get something that looks like this. And you open it up, and inside are all the DVDs, and then you have 1 copy of the coach's guide, but we're willing to send you as many coach's guides as you want. Because we're thrilled when you enlist a bunch of small group leaders that will lead small groups of athletes. And by the way, women on women, men on men, that's my recommendation. Anyway, and then you get the license to use this for the rest of, at that school, wherever you want to do it year after. You don't have to buy a license every year. It's yours, and this is year 1 right here. So does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, ask that again?
1, 2, 3.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. this is going to feel like it's a plant in the audience. These other videos, which I just happen to have with me here, if you wanted to show these short video clips, not for athletes, but for just a regular student, we have book 1, book 2, and book 3 finished. I'm going to shoot book 4 this year. But book 1 is about a 10-minute video. I'm not telling sports stories. I'm just telling stories. But we're doing all the images in book 1. And in this, what you get is a video clip a 10-minute video of me teaching. The screen fades to black. Two questions come up on the screen. But you also get a disc that has all the teaching notes, if you want to teach it yourself, all the PowerPoint images, so you can teach it yourself if you want. Screensaver, et cetera, et cetera. And then book 2 and book 3. And these are just videos that you can buy. It's actually curriculum for a semester that you can buy for just any student group that you want to take through it that's not an athletic program. So this would be good with student government, with your Baptist Collegiate Ministry students. Has anybody used these here? I don't know if you have. I know some of you teach Habitudes, but you may have chosen to just teach it yourself. This just gives you the chance to either teach it yourself or use video of me teaching it for about 10 minutes at a time. Okay, does that make sense there?
Tim asked about using
their freshman experience.
Oh, okay. I got a stereo going. Okay. Okay. Yes, Carolyn.
Ask Dr. Debbie and Bobby what they're doing. We talked earlier about it.
Yeah. Can you stand up, Debbie? That'd be great, because I love this creativity that you guys have used.
We have each week a different habitude, and we have a speaker come in and have them speak on that habitude, and then the small groups teach the habitudes the rest of the week. Usually they meet on Thursday night.
That's neat.
And so it's worked for us, and it's building and growing, and we're on the fourth, and he's supposed to be producing the fifth book.
Now, you know what I love about this? They're going through the Habitudes, so there's a sequential sense of content, but different voice each week. They're getting different speakers to take thermostats and thermometers, rivers and floods, or iceberg, or whatever. The University of Alabama, which is the number one ranked team, their athletic program, they bring in a different speaker. They got the president of the university coming in to teach one of these, and then the athletic director, and then the assistant, and then one of the faculty, then the dean of students came in and taught one of these. I love that. So these student athletes are getting exposed to different voices, but they're doing a sequential walk through these images and growing as leaders. So it's kind of been fun.
So on these large camps, how are they gathering students?
Good. That's a great question. Did you hear that question? How and when do they do it? If you guys know anything about athletics, time is the most valuable commodity. In fact, I'm sure that some of you have thought, I don't know when we're going to have time. I don't know when they're going to say we have time to do this. It varies. But let me just tell you what they're doing. At Alabama, they have a time Sunday night. They have a room in the athletic building. This is our time, Sunday night. With Jacksonville State University in Alabama, they actually watch the DVDs just before game film time. They do film, but right before they do the film about performance, they talk about character. And I love Jack Crow, who's the head coach there. He says, gentlemen, this is as important as anything we're going to do all season. We're going to build your hearts. So they watch the DVD. Then they have all 110 players on their football team go to small groups. He's got all of his 11 coaching staff lead a small group. I'm so proud of him. And then they come back together for film, for game film. So, and that's, I don't know when that is, Monday, I think. Texas, I think, does it on Thursday. But, at this point, it's just whatever night. You just have to pick a time that works into your natural training schedule. Donnie Mabe is the FCA chaplain at Texas. And he said, man, we're going to utilize when they would go do weight training. We're going to say, this is part of your weight training. We're going to train your spirit, And so I think it's kind of cool to say we're tacking on that to the body and heart. So I think it'll be you guys are going to have to say, okay, where would it naturally fit into the already viewed as preparation time each week? And the good news is, like you said, you can do it 15, 20 minutes if you want. Some teams take an hour, some teams take 30 minutes, some teams take 15 minutes. And at Texas, it was all what Mac Brown would let them do because he had to get sold on it first. But now he's sold on it. So we're just trying to be wise. Yes, John? Oh, yeah. Yes. This is another cool way you might add value to your campus. We have a number of schools, maybe 20 or 25 schools, that are using Habitudes Book 1, both faith and values, depending on the school, use this book for a first-year experience. I don't know if you've noticed, but many schools across the country are saying, for retention purposes, we've got to build into the first-year students so they stick around. Well, let me tell you something. That's what the university values, retention. You could come in as a believer saying, I can help with this. We'll do something, you know, blah, 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 blah. So faith-based, values-based, we have we put a package together that's got the books, it's got a teacher's guide, it's got some first-year material, another video called The Life You Were Meant to Live, where we help them focus on finding a purpose and a major, and we do this for a first-year program as well. And again, it's one habitude a week for a whole semester, small groups. We have some Christian universities that have their entire first-year student body going through it. So it's just been thrilling to see culture being built, beginning with the first-year students and good teachers that are doing small group time. Is that what you were, is that what you want, John?
Our presidential leadership class uses this.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's neat. Good. Well, you probably know this already, but let me say it. I'm a little bit baffled and astounded, pleasantly. You know, when God's in on something, you kind of are shocked. I mean, I love hearing Rick Warren say, I don't know why people buy this purpose-driven life book, you know. But we're excited because I think it's given believers like you another road into the campus, if you're especially on a state campus, where you can add value, something they understand, and they start liking you more and more. And then you have a platform to say, oh, we have so much more to share, you know. But at least this is something they understand, and it seems to add value. Some of you have heard this great, great acronym, EPIC, from Dr. Len Sweet. I believe he's right on. He says this is an EPIC generation. The letter E reminds me, go ahead and click, they are experiential, okay? The letter P reminds me, they are participatory. They want to participate in the outcomes of where program is going. So you need to give them a voice and ownership, student support, what they help create. The letter I reminds me they are image-driven or image-rich. They grew up with images all of their life. And then the letter C reminds me they are connected. Okay? So we just feel like Habitudes gives you an epic way to deliver content that they need, that's timeless, but in a very relevant way for today. Teaching timeless content in a current way. Does that sound familiar from this morning? Using what is cultural to say what is timeless. Okay, keep going. I have decided through the research that we have done over the last 6 years, since the beginning of Growing Leaders, that there are three great needs in every college student. State campus or Christian campus, okay? Now, apart from they need to find God. God is the result, we hope, of our work. But let me tell you what three great needs are that even a secular or, excuse me, a non-Christian dean or administrator would recognize. Here they are. Number one, emotional intelligence. This has become a dire need in students today. Are you familiar with this term, emotional intelligence? It's critical. Daniel Goleman has shed great light on this subject in the corporate world. He wrote a book called Primal Leadership, followed it up with a book called Emotional Intelligence. Emotional intelligence is really about your EQ, not your IQ. It used to be 15 years ago, we thought the person that was the smartest person in the room was a leader. Mm-mm. Have you not ever said this? How could such a smart person do such a stupid thing? It's because of EQ problems. IQ is not the most important factor in leadership. It's EQ. Now, can I tell you for the sake of just insight? Your emotional intelligence is the sum total of four issues. See if you don't think these might be issues in this next generation. Number one, self-awareness. Number two, self-management. Number three, social awareness. And number four, relationship management. We believe those four are huge in students today. We cannot assume they have manners and courtesy, that they know that they have any kind of moral compass based on scriptural principles. We cannot assume that. And these are emotional intelligence issues that causes boys and girls to text message and break up with a boyfriend through a text or any number of things because they just don't have the relationship skills they need. We have athletic programs to say that is definitely a problem with our players today. Okay, those four again that make up emotional intelligence are self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. How to manage relationships. By the way, if my wife and I have worked on anything outside of their walk with God, with our two children, it's been this issue. We want our kids to be good with adults, relationally, be able to look them in the eye and say, yes, ma'am, and talk with, and get a job, hello, you know, all those things. And all I'm saying is these are huge emotional intelligence issues. And this generation, as much as I love them and believe them, are in dire need of these things. We work with Chick-fil-A. There are 40,000 kids under 25 years old that work in Chick-fil-A units. They're bringing us in. We're in partnership with them to build habitudes into these kids because emotional intelligence is an issue. And I think the Chick-fil-A employees do pretty well. I think McDonald's needs this, for heaven's sake. But in any case, that's number one. Number two, character development. Again, we cannot assume that there's depth of character coming with those students that graduate out of high school into college when we get them. So habitude simply gives them a way to develop a moral compass based on biblical ideas. In fact, I would say books 1 and 2 really deal with those two issues in the habitude program. Wouldn't you agree, Bob? And then number three, the third greatest need they have is leadership perspective. I believe in the world that these students are graduating into post-college, every student is going to need to learn leadership skills. It can't just be for the student government or the RAs. Every kid, think about the world, the complex world they're going into. In fact, it wasn't just me that said this. The Higher Education Research Institute out of UCLA did a study in the year 2000, published a book. It was funded by Kellogg Foundation. And their conclusion was, in today's complex world, every single graduate is going to need to learn leadership skills. Now, something... I forget who I talked to earlier, but something that was brought up earlier that I want to bring up to you. The reason we talk this way, and even though everybody doesn't always believe us, we still hold to our guns with this, is because of this. Did you notice this morning that I define leadership a little differently than perhaps the traditional definition? If you define leadership as someone that holds a position of authority and is overseeing a big group of people, then my goodness, no, not everybody's going to be a leader. In fact, I'm setting students up for frustration if I say you're all leaders. Only 1 out of 10 of you are going to find some kind of a management position somewhere. But can I suggest this? I think there's leaders big L and leaders little L in the world. Big L leaders make up 10 to 15%. They're the ones that are gifted to lead, take charge, they got the personality, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's probably 1 out of 10, maybe 1.5 out of 10. The other 8.5 to 9 out of 10 of us are leaders little L. We still have influence, even though we don't feel gifted to lead. And if I can use language that might make sense to you now, I like to call these two big L, little L leaders this. Habitual leaders and situational leaders. Habitual and situational. Now think with me on this. Habitual leaders are the ones that lead out of habit. They're the natural leaders. At 5 years old, they were taking over the kickball team on the playground. They're just the ones that have always been natural leaders, right? And again, 10 to 15% of the population. The rest of us, and probably most of us in this room, are what I would call situational leaders. I'm a situational leader. I'm the one that would wake up in the morning and say, I'm not a great leader, but put me in the right situation, one that matches who I am, my passions, my gifts, my strengths, in that one zone. I know what to do. I have influence in that one area. That's my sweet spot. And by the way, when I get in that role, I come alive. I have intuition. I have influence. I'm comfortable. I'm confident. What we need to do, leaders, is help these students find their situation, their God-given area of dominion that they were wired to play the role of Christ, to be Jesus in that area. And you and I both know students that, oh my gosh, they're just... Sometimes they seem zany to us, but we help them find that sweet spot that they were wired to fulfill, that calling. That's their situation. That's why I'm saying if they find their situation, they're going to find they have influence. We better prepare them to lead the way in that situation. Okay, keep going. Let's just keep doing some more slides and we'll... You guys may or may not want to write this down. And in fact, let me just stop before I give you this. This is going to be content that is fairly fresh. And I'm not sure if we'd rather answer questions or whether we need to do this. What time should we stop here? I want to be just careful because I'm ready to stop any time or we can keep going.
I think we've got another 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay. You guys okay with 10 more minutes?
Why don't we do this? If you feel like you need to go, just go ahead and go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But if you want to stay, we'll stay. You guys want to stay for a little while and listen to 10?
I'll do 10 more minutes. If you can hang for 10, we'll just stop in 10 and then...
Feel free to go if you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, let's see. I tell you what, before we do any more content here, I would rather know I scratched where you itched. So let's, if we want to take the final 10 minutes and really just talk about how this might be useful on our campus, I'd rather do that. Then if there is time, we can do some more content. But does anybody have a scenario that you want to talk about, like on your campus, or a question you want to ask, anything at all? Yes, go ahead.
On our campus, we're trying to work with our vice president, and he sold on it and everything. But we've got an issue on our campus, and we're trying to figure out how to implement this into. And that's, and one of my students caught you earlier, and that's dealing with ag and cowboys.
Yeah, yeah.
That we're starting a rodeo cowboy church and all that. Trying to figure out how to implement that into it because, yes, they're athletes.
Yeah.
Yes, they're students. But you know how they are.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that negatively.
Sure, it's different.
They think that they are a separate group by themselves.
Yeah.
And they understand that. And
yeah.
So approaching it from the standpoint of an agriculture or rodeo situation might be an interesting format. So
absolutely.
If I go to talk to my dean, my vice president of academic affairs, that will come up because
yeah.
they're such academically oriented towards agriculture.
Yeah. Do you guys have an FFA chapter?
No, not on the campus.
Okay. Well, FFA has chosen Habitudes as their leadership resource nationwide. So we're working with a national office. We have not yet developed a Habitude book with agricultural stories in it, but FFA, in fact, about, I think all 50 states and different campuses are using, actually book one, book two, and book three. The leaders are going through book three. The first year students in FFA are book one. What they have done is really what I think you all need to do if you're going to use this. You need to read through the chapter and say, how do I apply this to our context? How can I tell a story that really plays out this principle? And I think you'll find if you get to know Habitudes, there's a way to apply them everywhere. So I think really it's that application. Some leader is going to need to take the bull by the horns, pardon the pun, and just really, I'm just trying to be relevant here. And you know, apply it for that context. But you may, if you have any contact with FFA, you may want to contact either a state or national FFA person and say, what do you guys got going? Because they've been using this and life-giving mentors with their leaders all across the 50 states. Yeah, so, yes, go ahead.
If you had the heart of a young man and he was low on the emotional intelligence and he was involved in your group,
okay, did you all hear the question? What if you have a young man that you think is a potential leader, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, or disciple, but he's low in emotional intelligence, self-awareness, social awareness, etc. I actually had many of those. And let me tell you, first of all, let me just suggest a resource, and then I'm going to give you a couple of ideas. On the table out there, there's a resource called 52 Leadership Ideas You Can Use With Students. There are actually projects that you can do with students that need help in these different areas, like relationships, et cetera, et cetera. So it may be those 52 ideas, maybe three or four of them you might be able to use with one of these students. What I have done with my students is I've tried to build an awareness of the importance of relationships, not just up here, but in their interactions. So let me take a couple of exercises I have done. The first guy that I saw this problem in, I took him out to a shopping mall, but not to shop. He and I got shoulder to shoulder, and we walked down that big wide aisle between all the stores in that shopping mall, and our goal was to look at the faces of every single person we passed by, those other fellow shoppers. And as we looked at their faces, we would inwardly just pray, God, what are their needs? And you know, you probably figured this out. You can see needs on a face, can't you? You can see loneliness and anger and depression sometimes. And then he and I, after we had passed by that cluster of people, would just pray for them. We didn't know their name. Just, Lord, those older people look lonely. God, show them yourself. If they don't know you, reveal yourself to them. God, those teenagers look angry. Father, just give them peace. And if they don't know you, reveal yourself to them. Well, I'm telling you, within 30 minutes, this guy and I are both in tears in the shopping mall because he's given us this sense of awareness where they're not just shoppers in the way, but they're souls. And that exercise, as we did that for a few weeks, began to build his awareness of people and relationships and, you know, just the whole social thing. And then I began to have him apprentice in a small group and just build relationship skills, helping to lead that small group. And then afterwards, the small group leader, who was very adept at self and emotional intelligence, would say, you know what? There was an awkward silence tonight. Here's how you can do, you know, blah, 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 and kind of just mentor him in that. So I think some of it is just sticking by someone in a discipleship sort of relationship. Focus on the relational self-awareness things and do exercises like that and just say, this is what you got to do. You got to be moved by lost people, and you have to see the needs before you see the flaws and those kinds of things. Actually, I'll give you a confession. My very first employee evaluation with John Maxwell wasn't pretty. Now you're taking notes, aren't you? Actually, it wasn't unpretty. It was just, it was 1983. I was 23 years old. I had just started with John Maxwell, this wonderful leadership guru, you know, had written books and everything. And I sat down with him, and John said, hey, we want to just do an evaluation. Got a little form here. And John said, man, Tim, I'm so glad you're on the team. Lots of affirmation. So glad you're on the team. Man, hiring you is the smartest thing I ever did. Blah, blah, blah. He lists 7 reasons why I was just a great guy and did the great right. I'm taking notes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. But after he got done with all the affirmation and all the 7 things, he said, now there's just a few things you're going to need to work on. I said, beg your pardon? I had never had a boss or an employee or a parent, for that matter. My mom loved me. Ever tell me that I had a weakness. And I honestly said, what? Excuse me? And John said, yeah, there's a few things you need to work on. And the very first thing he told me was, he said, Tim, you're going to need to learn off the platform charisma. I'd never heard this term before. I think he made it up. But it's true. He was right. He said, here's what I've watched about you and your ministry. You are so anointed when you're up teaching. Man, you just, God's all over you. He said, then you walk off the platform, it's like you turn the button off. You just want to go curl up with a book by a fire and be alone. And I said, it's true. I am an introvert by nature. And John said, you've got to learn, and you know this, don't you, that most of your ministry is not on the platform. It's the 23 other hours when you're not on the platform. And I said, I don't know what to do. And if you know John Maxwell, in a way that only he can say, he said, just watch me. So over the next several weeks on Sunday mornings, I watched this guy. Now listen, to his tribute, he's brilliant at this. John is so good with relationship. He'd walk slowly through the crowds, just touching people, asking about their cat or their dog or their son, or you know what I mean, just loving on people. The guy, there's thousands of people in his church. He'd just stay until they're all gone. I know that's antiquated pastorship today, but this man did it. He's old school. And I tell you, I watched this guy and I learned emotional intelligence, really from my mother and John Maxwell. That's where I got it. So it can be learned. If I can do it, anybody can do it. But I had to stop down from my fast-paced type A agenda and just be better at self-awareness, how am I coming across, and relationships. So it can be done. Anyway. What else? Yeah, good question. She says, anybody besides white Americans using Habitudes? Absolutely. In fact, I've been so pleased, because I have a heart for the nations, to see a number of other, I think there's 14 other countries, 9 other languages. Habitudes has been translated into 9 languages. We have a base in Asia. By the way, listen to this. This is so cool. 11 universities in China, communist China, are doing Habitudes courses. So here are these biblical virtues being taught in these countries. It's really fun. And they're in Arabic. Remember I told you to go to Egypt? These Habitudes are in the Arabic language among Muslim countries. And it's the same quality of the book that you see here, but in Arabic language, right, reading from right to left instead of left to right, same images. Afghanistan, it's in the Dari and Farsi language for Iran and Afghanistan. This is really cool. When we were called by one of the department heads in Afghanistan, it was an English-speaking man. He said, the government would like to go through Habitudes. And I said, you're kidding. Because these are really for young people and for, you know, Americans. And I said, why? And here's what he said. He said, we looked at Stephen Covey and John Maxwell. And he said, that's all really good. It's the same kind of end result. But they said, it's very didactic and very list-oriented. There's 17 points and 14 things to remember. He said, Afghans don't learn that way. They learn through stories and pictures. I said, okay, that's what I got, stories and pictures. So they asked us to come over and train department heads in Kabul. But here's what I said to them. I said, I'll be glad to come over. I'm honored to teach your department heads if you'll handpick the top couple of dozen university students and let me teach them too. So they handpicked 24 men and women. This is a big deal in Muslim countries. Men and women to sit down in a one-week seminar. And our board chairman at Growing Leaders and I taught Habitudes to Islamic students who are going to be parliament members, doctors, attorneys. And they were all English-speaking. So, man, we just fired away and did it. And afterwards, this is how they do it over there. We sat on pillows for a Q&A. The first 45 minutes of Q&A was all about God. Now, we added value. All we talked about was leadership. Never once mentioned Jesus all week. But they knew there was something different about this. And so in that country, I shared the cross, the redemption, what Jesus did. And I said, I know Islam is different. I understand that. But these are principles that come from the... And so we were invited to share the gospel to those folks. Now, here's what you're really asking, I think. In each one of these different cultures, we always ask the in-country contact, do we need to change one of the images? And we've had to. For instance, the Golden Buddha, which is in Book 1, that didn't fly in Asia because Buddha is so... That's just not a good one to tell a story about. Oh, that's funny. You know, you don't do that. So we changed that one to a different one. In Afghanistan, there's another one in Book 1 called the Half-Hearted Kamikaze. That sounded a lot like a terrorist. So we changed that one out. So we're willing to make this culturally relevant. The key is an image and a really cool, sticky story, you know, that make it fly. So it's been fun to see it go in other countries and see kids that perhaps might have been candidates for terrorism at 13 going through Habitudes and learning a different way.
So,
it's in Spanish, Book 1. Yeah, yeah. So, no, not Japanese. I'm sorry, not yet. So. You guys are so kind to bear with me. I hope this didn't sound like some sales pitch. But what I'd love to do is dialogue with you or have one of our team members. If you ever want to just explore how it might work with an athletic team, first year, RAs, student government, BCM leaders. This is just a tool. And I know God gave it to us and He can take it away in a minute. But it's working right now. It seems to be getting traction. We're working on some other schools, aren't we, John? Hoping to get it in some other schools. I'll let you guys know through this man when we get on some more Oklahoma schools. We're hoping for OSU and OU pray for us this year. We'd love to see that happen. And if we do, I want to make sure you guys are informed and somehow brought in on the story. But just brainstorm if this might be helpful. And we'll be at the book table to talk if you want to later. So, yeah, Sean, I'll let you.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, thanks, you guys.